For the rest of us today, we are turning the page on our journey. We're moving away from Leviticus, and today we turn our attention to Numbers, also known as Sefer Bamidbar. Continuing our journey, working our way through the Torah, again, the first five books of our Bibles, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and what we have been calling the Jesus backstory. And with that, today we come to not only Sefer Bamidbar, but we also come to Parsha Bamidbar. Again, the Torah divided into 54 parshiot. And so today we come to Parsha Bamidbar, and it is the 34th of the 54, and really marks a transition from the book of Leviticus. Leviticus, for the most part, really being about the giving of commandments, God giving his commandments to the people of Israel through Moses, keeping in mind all of that takes place really at the foot of Mount Sinai. Whereas here in Numbers, while it begins around Mount Sinai, it's really the story of the journey of the people of Israel through, and here's the key word for today, through the wilderness. Some translations will say the desert. As Rabbi Alex Israel puts it, he says, Bamidbar is a book, and he's speaking of the book here, not the Parsha, the book of Numbers, whose central drama is the journey to Israel. That is its primary agenda. The book narrates Israel's departure from Mount Sinai and its journey through the wilderness. So again, hold on to that word, through the wilderness for an entire generation. To this end, Bamidbar begins in preparation for the march before describing the process with all its failures and setbacks. At the end of the day, the book is complete when the Israelites are ready to enter the land of Canaan. And so with that, Parsha Bamidbar, it picks up with 1 and 1, Numbers 1 and 1. It runs through 4 and 20, noting the centrality again of the wilderness. We read it right here in the opening line where it begins, Numbers 1 and 1, Vayedaber Adonai El Moshe, which probably sounds familiar to most of us, and said Yahweh, and said the Lord to Moses. And then it says, Bamidbar Sinai, meaning in the wilderness of Sinai. And so really straight off here, Numbers, the book of Numbers, is contextually placed, is, we could say, centrally located, Bamidbar, right, in the wilderness. Now with that, what we want to get is that this Parsha is read right before Shavuot. Shavuot is one of the three pilgrimage festivals. It's an agricultural harvest type of festival. And it celebrates the giving of the Torah. And so with that, there is this deep sort of connection. There's this connection, and it's all through Jewish scholarship. There's this deep connection between the Torah and Bamidbar. There's this deep connection between the giving of the Torah and the wilderness, where we have, first off, the giving of the Torah, right? And it's loud, and it's noisy. It's a dramatic, it's even a terrifying sort of spectacle, noting Exodus 19 and 16, we read there, on the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning with a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp trembled. Verse 18, the smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. And so it's loud and it's noisy, it's dramatic. Now keep in mind, this passage that we're reading here is situated in Parsha Yitro. And so put that in your back pocket, set it next to you for a moment, Parsha Yitro. Verse 19, it goes on, as the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and the voice of God, it says, answered him. And so again, we have loud, we have noisy, it's dramatic. And it's there we read, the voice of God spoke to him. And so connected, right, associated with that then, we have Parsha Bamidbar, right? And said Yahweh the Lord, Bamidbar, in the wilderness. What is, writes the Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, a place of silence? He says, to be sure, when the Israelites received the Torah, there was thunder and lightning and the sound of a shofar. The earth felt as if it were shaking at its foundations, and yet the wilderness is a place of silence. There is nothing visually to distract you, and there is no ambient noise to muffle sound. And so again, point being, there is this connection not only between the Torah, the giving of the Torah, and the wilderness, but even more, it's a connection between the voice of God and silence. There is this deep connection between the voice of God and silence. In fact, Parsha Yitro, going back to Parsha Yitro, at the very beginning, 18:1 is where it begins, and it reads, Vayishma Yitro, meaning Jethro heard. Which is interesting in that, as Rebetzin Esther Jungreis, as she notes, the voice of God was audible throughout the universe. Right? In other words, it's loud, it's noisy, it's dramatic, maybe even terrifying. But, she says, it was only Jethro who heard. We could say it was only Jethro who heard the silence. She goes on, our sages teach that when the kings of the nations heard those awesome sounds, they thought a cataclysmic event was about to occur. And for a very brief moment, they stopped to listen, but then returned to their old ways. And so, point being again, there is this deep connection between the voice of God and silence. Which seems a bit interesting in light of the fact that Judaism, Jewish culture, tends to be very verbal. It's interesting, it was back in the 70s, there was a BBC documentary. It's called The Long Search. It was hosted by Ronald Eyre. And in this documentary, he expresses his amazement, his surprise at how loud and confusing and even argumentative it is in the Beit Midrash, right? The house of study. You might remember that from a few weeks ago. And so much so that he asked this question. He said, is there such a thing as silence in Judaism? To which one of the guests replied, Judaism is full of silences, but we don't talk about them. Which makes sense. If we talk about them, it's no longer silent. Right? Vayedaber Adonai El Moshe Beit Midbar. Right, it's in essence, it's in the wilderness of life that we find the voice of God is intimately connected to silence. It reads in Psalm 19, opening line, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of His hands. Day to day they pour forth speech, night to night they communicate knowledge. There is no speech, there are no words, their voice is not heard. Yet their music carries throughout the earth. I love that. Psalm 65:1, O God in Zion, to you even silence is praise. The sages called silence a fence of wisdom. They say if words are worth a coin, silence is worth two. From Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, all my days I have grown up among the wise, and I have found nothing better than silence. From the Zohar, which is another Jewish text, it leans into the kind of stream of mysticism. It reads of silence as the medium in which both the sanctuary above and the sanctuary below are made. We can also think back to, remember how long ago it was now, the series we did on the Amidah. Right, that prayer that is really central to all of Jewish life. Keeping in mind that the Amidah is always recited as silent prayer first. It's always recited first as silent prayer. It's often described as a prayer in whisper. A prayer in whisper. It's based on the pattern of Hannah, who, praying for a child, she spoke in her heart, her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. And it's all of that then that led the Rabbi Sacks to note the silence that counts is thus a listening silence. And listening is the supreme religious art. It's this listening silence that is really central then to the story of Elijah, found in 1 Kings. We've studied into that a couple of times, I think, over the years. But Elijah, he's come through the wilderness. 1 Kings 19:11, the Lord said, "Go out and stand at the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountain apart, tore the mountains apart, shattered the rocks before the Lord. Right? And so surely God is speaking here, right? This is God speaking, but we read the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake, which makes sense. I mean, if you want to get somebody's attention, that's what you do, right? Cataclysmic sort of event. It's loud, it's noisy, it's dramatic, it's terrifying. Surely this is God speaking, right? Shaking us up, getting our attention, but the Lord, it says, was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire. And well, I mean, this fits, right? It worked well with Moses. The burning bush, God speaking to Moses. But again, the Lord was not in the fire. And then we read, after the fire came a gentle whisper. Right after the fire came coal, the mamadok in Hebrew. Translated here as a gentle whisper, what Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel translates, a voice of silence. A voice of silence. It's a silence that we read all over the Bible, all over the scriptures. Deuteronomy 27:9. Then Moses and the Levitical priests said to all Israel, "Be silent, Israel, be silent and listen. You have now become the people of the Lord your God. Be silent and listen." Habakkuk 2:20, "The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him." Psalm 4:4, "Tremble and do not sin. When you are on your beds, search your hearts and be silent." Ecclesiastes, "The words of the wise are heard in silence more than the cry of a prince among fools." Right? It is in the silence that the voice of God speaks. And said Yahweh the Lord, right? Bamidbar, in the wilderness. And it's that backstory then that we also see flowing in and through the life of Jesus in the New Testament. Eremos is the Greek word for wilderness. It's used about 50 times throughout the New Testament. Most often we find it actually in the Gospels. From the Gospel of Mark 1:35, it says, "Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to," and it says, "Eremos," went off to a place of silence. Mark 6:31, "Then because so many people were coming and going, they did not even have a chance to eat, he," Jesus, "said to them," his disciples, "come with me by yourselves," and then it says, "Eremos," "come with me by yourselves to a place of silence." Luke 5:15, "Yet the news about him," right, about Jesus, "spread all the more, so the crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses." Verse 16, "But Jesus often withdrew. This was a practice. This is something Jesus did on a regular basis. He withdrew to Eremos. Right? He withdrew to silent places. He withdrew to Bamidbar. Right? And said, "Yahweh the Lord, Bamidbar." Right? Eremos. Silent places. A place of silence. Elizabeth Elliot, in her book, Keep a Quiet Heart, she reminds us that from Revelation 8:1, it says, "When the seventh seal was opened, there was silence in heaven for the space of half an hour." There is silence for the space of half an hour. She goes on, "What would happen in our homes if we should try to prepare ourselves for those heavenly silences by having just one half hour where there's no door slamming, no TV, no stereo or video, no iPhones, no social media, turn off the news, and a minimum of talk and quiet voices? Wouldn't it also be calming just to practice the stillness, which is the absence of motion? Why not try a quiet day or even a quiet week without the usual noises? It might open vistas of the spiritual life hitherto closed, a depth of communion with the Lord impossible, where there is nothing but noise. Makes me think of our time of open worship. Right, sitting together in the stillness and the silence, communing with God, listening for the voice of God in the midst of the silence. And so I want to invite us now to step into open worship. In open worship, oftentimes it's a time for sharing, and that's fantastic. It's a time to listen even to one another, to listen to the voice of God through one another. And it's okay just to be still, to let the silence be. Now, I don't want to dictate that. I don't want to run that show. But I do want to invite us to sit together, maybe not half an hour right now, but I do want to invite us to sit in the silence, in the stillness together. And of course, yes, if the Lord would lay something on your heart that is for the community, by all means, we want to listen. But as we do, as we enter into this time, I invite us to reflect, what would it look like to enter into a place of silence? And we're going to do that now. But what would it look like to enter maybe this afternoon, this week, Friday night, Saturday morning, Wednesday, at lunch? What would it look like to enter into a place of silence? What would it look like to listen for the gentle whisper? Maybe we can consider, how might I create a space for the sound of silence? As you think about going into your week, as you kind of think about what's on the calendar and what you have going on, how might I create a space in our days for the sound of silence? To use the words of Rabbi Sacks, we could ask, how might I practice the art of listening silence? How might I practice the art of listening silence? And maybe, as Elliot suggests, maybe we do. Maybe we begin with half an hour. Maybe it's just 10 minutes. Right? But no door slamming. We could ask, does the routine of my life, and here we can think agenda, right, calendar, time, energy, does the routine of my life make room for encounters with silence? Right? Does my daily routine, my weekly routine, does it make room for encounters with silence? And then with that, what maybe do I need to change to make myself more available to the sound of silence, that I might hear the voice of silence? And so let's enter into this time now. Vayedaber Adonai el Moshe b'midbar, and said Yahweh the Lord to Moses in the wilderness.